Can you imagine if when Noah of biblical times received the message that the world was about to be destroyed, he had had mobility options other than an ark? If he only lived in a world in which he could have ordered a shared boat ride or picked up a dockless e-surfboard that would have whisked him away from his city and onto safe land, it would have saved him a lot of work. Truth be told, Noah would have had trouble sorting through the many mobility and micro-mobility options. And with the impending flood, he would not have had the opportunity to open, or the time to open, 5 different apps and compare and contrast. Unlike Noah, the range of transportation options at the fingertips of contemporary urban commuters is both astonishing and at times overwhelming. For the Luddites, filling up your car with petroleum, sitting in a car for an hour and a half to complete a 15-mile trek across in New York, for example, the GW Bridge, and then spending a week's worth of salary on parking is still an option. For those that don't want to drive into the office, there is the option of public transportation, a mode of transport that, depending on the city, can range from clean and convenient to inefficient and unsafe. And then for the technophiles, there are the ride-sharing and micro-mobility solutions that have dramatically changed the urban landscape. Dockless e-scooters and e-bikes, traditional bikes, Ubers and Lyfts. Depending on the weather, your athletic profile, and risk tolerance, there is an option to help you navigate our cities in a fashion that is often better for the environment, that reduces congestion, and can be economically more affordable. So who is managing all this? And is there a way to have all the different mobility options on one easy user interface that compares and contrasts by price, modality, accessibility, and even environmental impact as measured by fuel type? Well, I wouldn't be asking the question if there wasn't a solution, and a brilliant one at that. Today on Raising Your Antenna, I will be speaking with Scott Shepherd, Chief Commercial Officer of Free2Move, a Berlin, Germany-based company that has developed a solution to manage the puzzle that is the new urban transportation environment. In addition to discussing their consumer-facing app, Scott and I will delve into the role of cities in facilitating the transformation of their streets and highways, and how Free2Move is partnering with said cities to deliver data to manage the demand, trip patterns, and utilization of these emerging transportation options. We'll also touch on the relationships between the private sector and the public sector, and what Free2Move is doing to help those two major stakeholders play in the sandbox and play in a way that would make kindergarten teachers proud. Back with Scott in a jiff.
You're listening to Raising Your Antenna with host Keith Sackheim.
Scott.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us from Lisbon, Portugal, a beautiful city on the Iberian Peninsula.
Yes.
That any of my listeners who have not been, put it on your vacation list.
Indeed.
Yeah, I've been up there once. I was on a cruise and we stopped in Lisbon, and it was fantastic. So I'm a little jealous. Hackensack, New Jersey, where I'm standing right now.
Same as Lisbon, right? No, right? I'm kidding.
Not Lisbon. It doesn't have its history for sure.
That's true. They both have history.
Yeah. Anyway, Scott, so you're the Chief Commercial Officer for Free2Move, and you know, we like to begin all of our podcasts just with our guests sharing their professional journey.
Sure.
So how you got here, and also, you know, as Chief Commercial Officer, what your day-to-day role is with Free2Move.
Sure. Okay, great. So a bit of my background and journey, it's obviously been a pretty long and circuitous path, as I think a lot of professionals are in the world nowadays. But my background is really based on cities and data, as well as on transportation. So I actually got my bachelor's degree in geography from the University of Vermont. I lived in Burlington, Vermont for about 10 years. And essentially my background was in essentially mapping as well as data analysis, and essentially working with cities and environmental agencies to understand the placement of resources related to transportation and analysis of different demographic conditions. What I've done then is built upon my career in getting a master's of city and regional planning from San Diego State University, as I had relocated back to Southern California from New England. And in that path, I essentially decided to pursue a career in urban planning in the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as Southern California. So I held many different roles in the public and private sector, ranging from urban design to redevelopment to transportation planning. I finally made a transition in my career to government sector management of transportation technology programs, which kind of leads me more into my current role at Free to Move as Chief Commercial Officer, where essentially I am looking at management of technologies on highways, roads, and public transportation. From that role, I had held several different consulting responsibilities in the public and private sector. And as of a year and a half ago, my wife, who we met many years ago back in California, is a Portuguese American. And she recruited me to move to Europe, to Lisbon here about a year and a half ago. And I took a role with a German startup, which is called Free to Move. We're owned by Group PSA, that's Peugeot Citroën for some of the audience here, the second largest French automaker. And I, again, am responsible for commercial development of mobility and transportation technology programs for governments and large corporate enterprises in Europe and North America. So one opportunity always leads to the next. And like I said, it's a circuitous path, but it's been a fun journey so far.
That's great. You know, my oldest son is a freshman at the University of Maryland, and you know, we're always talking about he's picking majors and thinking about careers, and that's what I always say to him. You know, look, find something that you're passionate about and, and go for it. But
that's right.
Where you're going to be in 20 years versus where you're thinking it'll be for most people is very different. So you know,
I would have never guessed this.
Right. Well, listen, I do public relations and marketing, and that's not one of those careers that when you're 7 years old and someone asks you what do you want to be, they don't normally say fireman, athlete, and marketing. So
that's right.
You never know where it's going to go, but you mentioned you know, the subsidiary of Peugeot Citroën, and actually if we can just kind of stand on that for a second. What's the relationship like, and you know, why does Peugeot feel the need to provide, you know, your particular service, which I've already kind of introduced a little bit to our audience, but you know, you can expand upon. But why do they feel the need to have a company like Free to Move and provide that service? And then also, what does it say about Peugeot? I know it hasn't been an active brand in North America in some years. So what does it say about its future in North America as well?
Right. So Group PSA, Peugeot, Citroën, their acquisition of Free to Move almost 3 years ago was essentially their entry into the new mobility and shared mobility space, using Free to Move as the brand for all of their digital mobility services. So their digital mobility services range from essentially aggregator consumer apps for public transportation, as well as booking cars, scooters, and bikes. It also ranges to essentially smart parking and other digital services in the mobility ecosystem. Using Free to Move as that brand, that top of mind, this is positioning Group PSA in terms of their long-term strategy in the next 5-10 years of re-entry into the North American market. So their acquisition of Free to Move essentially complements their re-entry into the North American market from Europe, which they have not been active for the last 30 years, by essentially leveraging shared mobility as a foothold and using that to essentially look at future opportunities with governments, corporate enterprises, as well as consumers that are moving from single-use occupancy vehicle ownership to shared mobility, whether it's in the Peugeot or Citroën brand, into other products and services, essentially the digitalization of mobility as other automakers and OEMs have been pursuing very actively in the last 2 or 3 years between Asia, North America, and Europe. I can name many different automakers that have taken a quite aggressive approach. So this is Group PSA's response and strategy in shared mobility.
Yeah, and they definitely have not gotten, I think, their share of voice when it comes to, you know, their efforts in the space. So I think that's also what makes our conversation today fascinating is, you know, this is, you know, Jaguar Land Rover, for example, BMW, Ford. I mean, these are companies that have made their move into whether it's new electric mobility. Vehicles, new mobility, what have you, centerpiece of their talking points. And as a result, have gotten their share of voice on this. And so it'll be interesting to hear, or again, thank you for sharing in terms of what the motivation is. And just as kind of a historical question, you know, why did Peugeot kind of leave the North American market and what's motivating its return now?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, why they left the North American market about 30 years ago. It was quite a crowded space at that time for kind of mid-level, mid-tier sedans, as well as the product offering at that point in time. In the late 80s, I think their exit from the North American market, correct me if I'm wrong, was 1991. So at that point in time, the U.S. Auto market was going through a transformation, and it was very competitive with the Japanese automakers at that time. So U.S. was really trying to follow the heels of Japan's success in the 1980s in North America, in the U.S. and Canada. So it was really kind of pushing a lot of the European automakers to the periphery, because Fiat exited even before Peugeot. So we saw a real shakeup in the U.S. Auto market, where U.S. was really kind of copying the Japanese template through the early mid-90s. And that's where there was kind of an exit. But now we see the digitalization, basically the convergence of Silicon Valley and Detroit, Michigan, in the new form of mobility. And previous players in the OEM space are now returning with a new foothold and a new approach that is essentially shared from a perspective of the millennial market, as well as the new context of how cities are made up nowadays in North America. So the push away from suburbs into the central business district of millennials, and people owning less vehicles and wanting to have really on-demand services, you know, from many different aspects, whether it's Airbnb, whether it's Netflix, whether it's Amazon, you know. So this is part of this whole push, and
everything
it's
a
real
service.
Opportunity. Yep. Everything is a service. Yeah, yep. Walking as a service. I've even heard that word.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, how do you do that one? But
so I know the number of other companies that are in the business of aggregating, you know, new mobility options and delivering that information to consumers. And I know that your business actually is kind of got this bifocus. So we're looking both at B2C and B2B. But first, let's look at B2C.
Yep.
What are the differentiators for Freedom Move? So when you're going out into the marketplace, what are you guys stressing?
Yeah, because there's a lot of, we call them MaaS, mobility as a service aggregators. And that would be the definition of Free to Move's business to consumer B2C products, or consumer facing product. And it's a pretty crowded marketplace, certainly in North America, and as well as in Europe too. And there's two different models. There's a closed ecosystem model, and there's an open ecosystem model. So it's kind of on terms of the spectrum. So we basically lean much more towards the open and agnostic approach to business to consumer in bundling and offering mobility service providers, whether they be e-scooters, whether they be car share, taxi ride hail, or bike share. And our differentiator is really, as a owned by an automotive OEM, we essentially really try to focus on having an open and agnostic model for consumers that will allow them the ability to compare and price their options in the urban landscape for all of their mobility choices. And having this integrated with full trip planning, journey planning, and coupling this with public transport information and mobile ticketing is really realizing the highest benefit of the consumer experience in shared mobility. So I mentioned that there's another approach, which is more of a closed approach, where perhaps a TNC, transportation network company in North America, or another automotive company would provide the full vertical stack of all different forms of mobility, but their own brands and their own offers. So this is not necessarily agnostic. This is kind of a closed model. We call this a walled garden. So it's a curated list and set of specific mobility providers owned by that aggregator, that app developer. So our approach is the opposite of that because, one, we provide open competition for the consumer, and two, we provide an even higher value to corporate enterprise and to governments. And we can talk about that in a moment, too, in terms of
we'll how we get to bundle that.
Yeah, and integrate our platform and what our differentiators are.
Yeah. So again, let's get to that. Let's unpack the challenges that are facing cities, both large and mid-size, and incorporating all these new mobility options.
Yeah.
And I guess the question I have for you is, you know, how are you partnering with city governments and urban planners to make that transition seamless and frictionless? And what are the unique obstacles that a smaller city may be confronting right now that is less relevant in a larger city?
So we're taking a real partner consultative approach to working side by side with cities, to doing a lot of active listening, kind of like a Big Four consultant. This is our role as a mobility subject matter expert.
Which is great because, you know, a lot of the mobility, shared mobility companies haven't been known for the collaborative listening towards. Yeah,
exactly. So we're taking a lot of those learnings from especially 2017, 2018, which was left a bit to be desired in terms of implementation. And we're turning that on its head and saying, you know what, if we can really partner with governments and cities and transportation operators, listen to their challenges, we can attract and bundle the best of shared mobility, then we can fill in these gaps in the white space of the challenges related to the implementation of micromobility, scooters and bikes, and why there's been so many missteps in the last year or two. There's been billions of dollars in investment in North American cities, but there's been really negligible results and success other than a few kind of nominal use cases. So taking that a consultative approach of helping cities out in providing integrated services and platforms that they can best analyze the performance of shared mobility, one, and then two, working side by side with mobility providers in looking at specific use cases where cities are challenged from either a day-to-day operational level, a regulatory level, or a long-term policy level. This is the type of dialogue and interface that we engage with cities, whether we are essentially looking to develop or sell our aggregator or a white label solution, whether we develop a data dashboard that integrates multiple mobility providers as an analytics toolkit for cities to assess micromobility, or if we just provide general consulting as well as lessons learned of what is working, what's not working in the marketplace. Now, how that works for smaller or mid-sized cities is very unique because it's much more of an ad hoc approach. They have not been flooded with maybe 20 different scooter providers where you see them clustered on sidewalks throughout cities. And it's really an approach that they're really closely monitoring, a lot of the smaller mid-sized cities, of what has worked and what hasn't worked. And you can see both sides of the spectrum, whether it be more progressive mid-size or larger cities are taking the pilot approach, especially to e-scooters, of assessing the performance and looking at how that can be matched to caps and permits as well as operations is one area of performance. But then the more reactionary level, which is cities just completely impounding, confiscating, namely scooters now, and pulling permits and kind of a cease and desist, is the other end of the spectrum. So that's really the opportunity I see in 2019 in the United States, is working with smaller mid-sized cities, not the Los Angeleses or New Yorks or Chicago's, but really those second and third tier cities, because that's where we're going to see most of this dynamic activity play out in 2019, 2020. And that's an area where Free to Move can really help and assist governments.
And you're having some of those conversations already with some of those mid-sized cities.
From about 150, 200,000 up to about maybe 500,000.
Okay.
Less than a million. That's where the action is right now, I would say.
Yeah, it does seem like a relatively untapped opportunity, so that makes a lot of sense.
Not New York, exactly.
Yeah. So, shifting across the ocean from North America, I know the challenges are different in Europe, and in Europe specifically, you know, public transportation infrastructure is a little more evolved, it's accessible, sure. and also, and maybe most importantly, baked into the culture, a lot more so than the U.S. And, you know, in our previous conversations, you know, you referred to this kind of as a hub and spoke model and in Europe. So what's your role in making sure that the emergence of private sector solutions and, you know, the MSPs and managed solutions providers will play nicely in the sandbox with public transportation options?
Well, we actually want to help MSPs out because we realize that in terms of their long-term sustainability and success in the European market is going to be different and perhaps more challenging from a regulatory perspective than in North America. Because again, whether they be local city governments or transportation service providers, TSPs, they call it here in Europe, or private contractors that operate bus and rail and tram services for the TSPs in Europe, they are typically, more cases than not, the central orchestrator of all forms of mobility. So that's where we talk about this kind of diagram of a hub and spokes. So the operators or the authorities are the hub and the spokes are all the different forms of mobility that feed into that. So given that that is really the culture as well as the landscape that Europe operates in and encourages, we know that to help MSP succeed and also to help cities succeed in attracting the best of micromobility, that is really taking that orchestration approach to shared mobility where we can essentially partner up and develop platforms and applications that will look at providing this sandbox that cities can proactively take a assessment approach and see what works and what doesn't versus getting more into this ad hoc reactionary role that we saw perhaps more so in North America in the last few years. So I would say it's going to be a bit more incremental, the launches and the new flood of investment in scooters and a bike share in European cities, even though it's really reaching a tipping point right now, it's going to receive a bit more scrutiny and a bit more requirement for collaboration on the part of the public sector to achieve maximum results, which is why perhaps even in the short term, this is going to be an area where free to move can really help out.
Yeah, you know, just like in North America or the U.S., right? You can't paint the entire U.S. with the same brush. I mean, the Southeast is different than, you know, the coastal areas or the Midwest and cultures.
Many different markets.
Right, and the same is true of Europe, right? I mean, there's going to be countries that will embrace this type of stuff really quickly and even embrace some of the chaos that ensues because, you know, the culture there is let the chaos play its way out and there'll be this almost Darwinian process and it'll all work out. Yeah. Some countries, you know, Germany comes to mind, for example, where that just doesn't work in Germany.
It's got to
be more scooters methodical and planned.
Exactly. Scooters are still not legal there until very soon, I think, in the next month or so. So there's, and even the UK. So there's certain countries where e-scooters aren't even launched yet. So they're taking a very slow, methodical approach. And then other countries, I would say even more in the Mediterranean, Spain, now Portugal here in Portugal, but Spain comes to mind, not Darwinian, but a bit more maybe open to this kind of aggressive launch of micromobility. And we're seeing some interesting results coming from that because it's almost a bit similar to what happened in the U.S. in the last year or two, what's happening in specific countries. So, yeah, it's really hard to describe Europe as one, you know, one market or one approach.
Yeah, and we speak of Mediterranean countries. You know, I mean, Israel, if you go to Tel Aviv, right? So, I mean, this is a booming major metropolis, but Again, all the different micromobility solutions are being tested there. I think that the private sector really encourages the government to allow the country to be a laboratory, a working laboratory for all these things. And which is really interesting. I was there a couple of months ago for actually a mobility conference. And it was astounding to see just the amount of bikes, e-bikes and e-scooters that were that were flying around Tel Aviv on highways and, you know, residential areas. I mean, everywhere by the beach. It was interesting.
I know.
Yeah.
I like that sandbox approach though too, because I think that if cities can take a careful approach to orchestrate mobility in a careful environment, and they can assess the performance, and that's really where they'll achieve the best results.
I think so. And I mean, the other thing is, you know, sometimes we get so focused on technology and the efficiencies therein, and especially when it comes to mobility, we don't speak enough about some of the safety issues that are involved. You know, if the private sector won't always watch that as closely as the public sector will, so that's all something that has to be part of the conversation.
That's right.
Okay, so if you could just also give us a sense of you know, where you're deployed right now. I know we talked a little bit about your plans for the U.S. market.
Sure.
I don't think you're here yet. I could be wrong on that, but if you're not, what are the plans? You know, what are the plans to come here? What does that timeline look like?
Sure. Well, actually, we are in the U.S. market. We started about 5 months ago in Washington, D.C. So we have several different solutions in operation right now in Washington, which are the free-to-move aggregator and white label solution app, which links to our free-floating car share across Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And we've just recently expanded into Virginia too, Arlington, Virginia. And we're also exploring additional cities in our roadmap, such as Atlanta and other regions in the U.S., whether it be for...
So those are bigger. So those are bigger cities, though.
They're bigger cities.
Washington, D.C. is a big city. And
Yeah, for car share. For car share, it's kind of economies of scale. So a lot of those markets, if we're looking at that particular offer, we're in a much larger market. If we're looking at just a technology-driven approach where it's just our app or a data dashboard, then those would be more of the smaller mid-sized cities across the U.S. where we're actively tracking RFPs and responding to proposals, et cetera, that kind of thing. So there's kind of a two-direction approach to our expansion in North America. So one is kind of mid-level cities, technology-driven, and then the larger metropolises for our car share platform.
And when do you expect to be rolling out something with one of the mid-sized cities?
So that's interesting because we have several different proposals out. So I would say from a mobility as a service pilot level, I would say by Q3 to Q4 2019, we should have our first project up and running. Name names yet, but
Of course. Yeah.
But I think we have a really unique offer, and that's what we're looking to differentiate from a lot of the standard U.S. players, which really provides us with that advantage, leveraging our assets from Group PSA, one, but also looking at how we take that cities first approach to helping governments in solve these unique mobility challenges. So it's really not a commercial off-the-shelf software package, a COTS package. This is very uniquely tailored to the requirements of each city.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, you know what? I appreciate, you're really good at answering these questions in a cogent way that's succinct, but also covers a lot of territory. So
it's a lot. Make your head spin.
It does, but I think that you've painted a really kind of clear and compelling picture as to the value. As to your value propositions and as a company, as well as I think where the public and private sectors are headed and what that looks like going forward. The last question I always give my guests, or really more of an opportunity, is the floor is yours. Is there anything that you'd like to add that hasn't been covered yet, as well as any advice? You said your career is more of a circuitous route, and you've obviously landed in a great position. So any advice you have for entrepreneurs or investors who are looking to get into this space, career advice or just vocational advice?
Yeah, let me talk just a bit more about Free to Move, just adding on to our value proposition. I'll talk about more on a personal or professional level. So just to kind of close out, really our focus, like I said, is we call it hashtag cities first. So if there's anything that I can kind of lend as a picture to our value and what we provide as a unique differentiator, it's that. Really, we see cities as the glue to sustainability of mobility, quality of life, and all different areas of long-term economic development. So the sky's the limit. And if you address issues at that specific scale, then you solve multiple challenges at the same time. So it sounds a bit altruistic, but really it's very specific to looking at how we can fill in these gaps where I think there's been so much great investment and ideas over the last 5, 6, 7 years in the new building landscape, but we really got to tighten our belts and look at what works and what doesn't work. And I think it all happens at the city level. So for us, in our philosophy, we know that that's going to deliver the best results. And then kind of shifting in terms of kind of on a personal, professional level, yeah, my career has just taken so many different twists and turns, more for the better than worse, definitely. But for me, I guess you could say I've kind of quote unquote kept it real because I've always loved transportation and cities and data. So I'm a geek at heart. And I think that's been the common theme throughout my career. And that's I've tried to focus on my career path is different challenges that are close to my passion one. So I think if anyone is looking to open up new doors and new opportunities in building up their portfolio, building up their personal professional network, as well as opening up new opportunities, you got to really do a lot of deep searching in terms of your core of what your passion is, and that will come out. And then you can really start outwardly projecting your brand. It's all about your brand, right? You're selling yourself, your profile, your resume, your story. And if people can really authentically look at your brand and what you like and what you are passionate about, then it will come through. And then not magically, but it's pretty cool how opportunities start flowing towards you. If you're get very good at networking, and you got to start to think about selling yourself. That's what it's about.
Thank you. That was, I appreciate, I know everybody listening will appreciate the advice and makes a lot of sense. The last thing is, you know, are you going to be at any industry conferences if people want to kind of follow you, or I don't know if you provide any content to the market or your thoughts or what have you? I know, what's the best way to follow you in social media, and then what's your conference schedule looking like?
Anyone can find me, Scott Shepherd on LinkedIn, Chief Commercial Officer, Free to Move. Just shoot me an email or invite. Happy to always connect. A bunch of events coming up in the calendar. Actually, Wednesday and Thursday this week, I'll be here in Lisbon at the Smart Mobility Summit. It's getting to be a real emerging event. Next week, I'm a keynote speaker at the World Shopper Conference in Cascais, Portugal, right near Lisbon, which is kind of a automotive smart mobility event. And this is here in the month of May. And then in June, I'll be at the Impact Mobility Summit on the 24th and 25th of June in Amsterdam. And then just filling out my calendar fast for the rest of the year. So it's going to be a lot of stuff.
Fantastic. Well, Scott, I know how busy you are. So thank you so much for the time. And look forward to being in touch.
Thanks a lot.
And another episode of Raising Your Antenna is in the books. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and look forward to connecting again next week. Raising Your Antenna is a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, Keith Zackheim, that features the movers and shakers and key influencers of the B2B technology industry. Our guests are leading revolutions and disruptions in the mobility, clean energy, healthcare, and real estate technology industries. Raising Your Antenna is brought to you by Antenna Group, a full-service digital marketing and public relations agency that focuses on the B2B technology industry. Please be in touch with me on Twitter at @CZackheim with any feedback about this podcast. And check out Antenna Group at www.antennagroup.com. If your organization is looking for a really smart and good-looking marketing and public relations partner,